So, moving right along, Mr. Engel here. Thought I recognized you. Doug, welcome.
Pleasure to be here. Where would you like to put me?
Well,
why don't you sit here?
Yeah, why don't you sit over there? You're probably aware of, you know, we've been, the last couple months, we've been gathering information about the East Side Rail Corridor from a few different perspectives, and the council is going to be asking our commission to kind of help filter information and so forth, and participate in a form of public process that'll be taking place locally. We're not sure what that's going to look like, so we appreciate you coming and giving us some of your thoughts, and then we'll get some more input next month, and I'm sure there'll be a lot more to come.
It's been a long road to get here. My name is Douglas Engel. Doug, I am the CFO with GMP Railway, and we are the selected third-party operator on the corridor, operating today from Woodinville north to Snohomish, providing freight service at this moment. And first of all, just, you know, thank you for the opportunity to share kind of our perspective on what's going on, and I'll try and keep this brief, so hopefully I can answer more of your questions than what I think you want to, you have. Anyway, so what we're doing is we are doing freight today. We plan on starting excursion services as soon as possible, and due to some changes in the way that the Federal Railroad Administration, the FRA, is handling RIF, Railroad Rehabilitation and Improvement Financing Loans. Sorry for the acronyms here. But our next gate with that funding, we have a $23 million loan in front of them, and the next gate is in May. And with any luck, the funding event and happens in September. And that is going to be to get the excursion services off the ground. That would also be to have the facilities completed and do build some stations and get the necessary track and bridge maintenance and upgrades done. So our focus right now is really on getting the line back in shape. And getting the excursion services started. Needless to say, Burlington Northern, having tried to get to a point of consummating this deal for 5 years, maintenance has not been their top priority. So there's a lot of deferred maintenance out there. We have a bridge inspection company coming out, and they're going to inspect all the bridges from Redmond north to Snohomish. We are under a confidentiality agreement now with the City of Redmond, and we are beginning discussions with them about having Redmond, the area there around Redmond Town Center, be one of the terminus for the excursion service, and the other one being in Snohomish, and we're in discussions with Snohomish as well as to how we would do that at First Street in up there. So, one of the things that we've done here in the last, this year, is we went out and hired a marketing firm to do some research, and they've talked to over 24 partners. They've talked to dozens of people about what they would like to see in the way of the excursion service. And we've come to that. It's going to be called the Bounty of Washington, the Tasting Train. Mm-hmm. And so versus being serving dinner, if you will, like the dinner train was doing, what we're going to focus on is showcasing local food, local foods, beverages, et cetera. And someone will coordinate all of that activity, and the train would run from end to end and probably have a 90-minute, two-hour layover in Snohomish, if you will, and head back down to the other end. With over 400,000 cruise ship passengers a year coming into Seattle, we thought it'd be a good idea if we could see if we could figure out how to get them over to the east side. get things going. This notion is, we thought that the Woodinville wine country would like this. We took it to them. They liked it. They took it to the Washington Wine Commission, and the Washington Wine Commission would like us to be able to showcase across the state. So, you know, we're getting from a partnering standpoint, and the reception we're getting, it's been overwhelmingly positive. Strong look at economic development. So our focus, as we said through this whole thing, is on the businesses that are along the corridor and what we can do to create a win-win. The bottom line in this from the excursion train is we are simply the vehicle. We're just the bus, if you will, that's going to get you from A to B. And yes, we can make these coaches, and we've already identified the coaches we'd like to get. They're nice. They're going to need some work. We're going to have to repaint them. One looks like a light brown leather with a bar down at the one end, and so you've got lengthwise bench seating, if you will, and then it's got some tables, and then there are two articulated train sets or coaches that will each seat about 120 people, and it would be set up more like a dining table for four people, if you will, at a location. One of the other things that came out from this was that our primary target audience is going to be the pre-organized group. So like Gray Line bus tours that may pick up people off of the cruise ships. In talking to the Tulalip Casino, they have bus tours that come down from Canada. And during the week, they're kind of at, okay, we need something for these people to do. The buses are already sitting there. We could take them to Snohomish. They could get on the train in Snohomish, ride down to Redmond Town Center, spend the day there, and then come back. So we're looking at a number of, you know, trying to come up with some creative ideas. We have different flavors of the tasting train as well. The other flavor that we'd be looking at is something more down the line of a heritage train. And the heritage train would be more family-oriented, probably run on Sundays, be a little lower priced, and go from there. We've discussed, we've made no decisions on these different tiers, but we've also discussed having a centennial trail train until the whole trail situation is reconciled, but take people and their bikes up to Snohomish and let them hop off there and go ride this centennial trail, and you know, the train's leaving every 2 hours, so hit one of those. So that's what we're doing on the excursion side. We're making steady progress. I've spent half of my career in the high tech and finance side, and only the last few years in railroad. And if I could give you a continuum, you would find that high tech's over here and railroads are over here. And they operate at two totally different. One's analog, one's digital. Mm-hmm. Let's just leave it with that. So all of our money at this standpoint is going into getting this excursion service up and going and getting the track maintenance done that needs to be done. We weren't allowed to go out and inspect the line before the deal closed to do the real nuts and bolts inspection, and so the FRA came out last month and they found a bunch of little things that need to be done. So we're working on that. So our RIF loan, one of the things that's kind of is very strong for us, and it's the direction that the FRA is going, is more towards public-private partnerships. They're looking now at more passenger rail kinds of services, where traditionally the FRA has looked, you know, very hard at freight and freight only. So we're actually going in the direction that the FRA is going, but the policies are changing, so we're trying to hit this target at the same time with our loan application. This allows us, though, to partner with communities like Kirkland. An example of this would be in Woodinville. They would like to replace that bridge over 202. Which is the main one coming into town. Well, Burlington Northern's attitude was, if you pay us $500,000, we'll talk to you. Mm. And without the $500,000, we have nothing to talk about. So we're not quite in that position. But we've already talked to the city of Woodinville about how we could partner to do this together, and we may be able even to finance this through RIF, which is, it's up to 35-year low-interest loan. And so if we partnered with the city, you know, that would be a win-win. We understand they're going after some federal money as well, which would help them out. But what I'm trying to say here is that we're being as cooperative in this as we can. I'm a citizen, a resident of Kirkland. I've been here since 1992. Most recently, I'm living currently out on State Street, but I've spent the last many years up in the Highlands, where the railroad tracks go on kind of two sides of the area there. I've got two boys at Peter Kirk Elementary and one son at Kirkland Junior High. So I just want to assure the council that we think of safety. That's obviously just without saying. We do hope to, we do intend to get to a passenger day train. As you're well aware, the voters approved in November 2008 with the ST2 initiative, $50 million in fixed assets for the corridor. They may be used, which can be used for engineering, design, the purchase of capital equipment and real estate that can either be sold or used on Sound Transit's existing transportation system. And this is all got to be done by the end of next year. What our belief is that if we're already running down to Redmond, you know, if somebody asked us to run during the week, we would probably do that. But going after the Sound Transit 2 money is what's going to enable the track to be rehabilitated. So what rehabilitation is it's you're basically replacing the ballast. I'm going to move this forward. You're replacing the ballast, you're replacing the ties, and you're putting down new continuous weld rail. In that process, you take the old ballast out. Well, that can very easily become the base of a trail. And the railroad, and so it's like, don't get, you have to get used to the word freight a lot when you talk about railroads, because that's just what it looks like. And so the word is used a lot, even though we're just talking about basic railroad stuff. And by the same token, when we talk about a maintenance of way road, it would look just like a trail. And if you were to go over to East Lake Sammamish, you would see a 10-foot wide or 8-foot wide gravel trail. Well, we would be pretty close to having that in place when we'd be done with the rehabilitation. We submitted a letter to the city, I want to say January, and it basically outlined our position in this, is that we're willing to put that base trail down, excluding the pinch points, at our cost. Because incrementally, it's not that big of a deal. If you go to go back out there later to do this, you're going to spend several times more money to get the same work done. If you're already out there with the heavy equipment, you're already out there with the ballast, it's pretty straightforward work to take that ballast that you've already pushed off to the side and flatten it out. And what we've heard in the way of my primary research and going out and talking to bikers, and my wife and I each own a bike, two bikes, the bikers don't particularly like big, long, flat things. It's kind of boring. Right along the Sammamish River Trail, you hear that. What they don't mind it if it's going up and down a little bit, or, you know, it's going around something a little bit. That seems to be okay. It's not a major plus or minus to them. What is going to be the issue, though, are the pinch points. And I believe that there are 51 pinch points that were identified in the PSRC study. Half of those are bridges. We will be discussing with Osmos when they come out for the bridge inspections what we can do to get across the bridges. There are some standard railroad solutions for getting across bridges, because now it's a safety issue for railroad workers that they be able to be on the side of the bridge out of the track and be able to get across. In the case of something like the Snohomish River Bridge, where you still have wood ties up on the bridge deck, you could replace every fourth tie with a super long one. Super long meaning it could extend out 8 or 12 feet. On one side you could put, say, bicycles only, and on the other side you put pedestrians. On the steel bridges, it could be a different story. And so we want to at least have a better understanding, and we've put money into our RIF application to evaluate this with the bridges. As a matter of fact, just the study is going to be just the inspection is $97,000 to have them come out and just look it over before they do any work. Our estimate on the work in our RIF application, we have $1 million allocated for bridge works. So as we look forward, to responding to the Sound Transit RFP for the $50 million for fixed assets. It's our understanding that RFP will come out in about September, is the word back that we've heard right now. We have no idea what that's going to look like. We have no idea if there will be other bidders. We wouldn't be surprised in the least bit if no other bidders were present. We've got quite an investment in the line to date, and anybody else that would be coming in would have to at least replicate a fair amount of that work. So our notion would be to take the Sound Transit money and use that to rehabilitate the track between Woodinville and Bellevue. Now, you got a little bit of a complication in Bellevue because you still have Sound Transit in Bellevue trying to figure out what that's going to look like. So if today I had to tell you what we were going to do, we'd probably get down to South Kirkland Park and Ride and call it good, basically wanting to stay out of the way until that is all figured out. The other part of the money that we would work with is getting the DMUs, the diesel multiple units. And we're a pretty strong believer that for this kind of a line, where the traffic volume's a little bit lighter than what you would expect with light rail, that the DMU is a much more cost-effective way to go. They are like 79% more cleaner than a regular locomotive. They weigh a lot less, so you have less wear and tear on the track, and they're much, much quieter. As a matter of fact, I wonder what the real sound difference is between a DMU going by and Link would be going by. I wonder what decibel difference. The difference is with Link, you've got all that catenary, all that electrical that you've got to add to the cost. And that's why we believe for the lengths that we're running that DMU is the way to go. I think you'd find it interesting to note as well that with the ridership numbers that the PSRC came up with between 6,000 and 7,000 on the corridor, that actually gives you higher ridership per mile than the Sounder. So we believe fully, and our numbers were more optimistic than that, but we decided that we would settle into the Sound Transit PSRC numbers to be more conservative. If you look further into the Sound Transit numbers, you'll see things like they only expect 8 people in Snohomish would possibly ride. Their ridership models don't particularly work well in areas like that. Out there at 11:30 in the morning, you can see a 40-seat Microsoft connector bus running up back and forth to Lake Stevens, etc. We firmly believe that there is more than ample ridership for the corridor to justify a light rail, a DMU type service. One of the other areas that we'll be looking at doing is finding out what it's going to take to connect Everett to Snohomish. That'll be another engineering set of works that we're going to want to do right away with that, in partnership with Sound Transit. One of the notions that we have is thinking about, well, if the, in a public-private partnership, is if Sound Transit, the voters, the taxpayers, all of us put $50 million into this, is that we would raise the money to put $50 million against it and make this thing go, to make this thing go. We need to wait and see what the RFP is, obviously, to see how that would work, but it's kind of the notion is, what could you do with $100 million between Snohomish and Bellevue? And we'd have to wait and see how much rehab work we do between Woodinville and Redmond before we would know what's going on there. The Sound Transit EIS is coming out. So with that, the intention and the funding to date that we're talking about is simply maintenance and repair and using conventional kinds of vehicles until we better understand where ST2 is going. So that's basically our plan, what we're up to. Our focus is on Redmond and getting excursion started today.
Thanks. I'm sure people have a couple of questions. Who wants to start?
I'll start. With the RIF funding, you mentioned the bridge inspection would be part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that. What's the extent of that bridge inspection? Then you mentioned does that cover the whole line to Woodinville, or is that just the Redmond portion?
That'll be Redmond through Woodinville to Snohomish.
Okay, so that does the
line that we would want to be operating on. Okay. Yes.
So the Kirkland section is
there's,
you won't know the bridge issues in Kirkland and
correct that thing. We do have the last BN inspection reports from 2003 to 2004. All of the bridges on the line are in fair or good condition.
On the Kirkland line?
All of the bridges.
Okay. Except for the Wilburton Tunnel.
That's a little problem.
Tom.
The volume, ridership numbers, you gave 6,000, or that was ST?
The ST numbers were between 6,000 and 7,000, and we've got a number of reasons why we would, we believe the numbers are higher.
And that's ridership from Bellevue through to Snohomish?
That would be on the entire corridor, including Renton.
Including Renton.
Including Renton. Yeah. Now, a couple of things that are...
Can I stop you a second?
Sure.
If you took it all the way up to our park and ride at Kirkland, you really wouldn't have much until Bellevue opened up and you could go all the way down to Renton.
Unless you shuttled people off the train mm-hmm. into downtown Bellevue. Mm-hmm. And with all the construction going on for Eastlink, et cetera, that may not be a bad mm-hmm. initial solution.
Would this presumably link up with Link?
Yes.
Natural?
That is Bellevue's desire, mm-hmm. is that we come right into the transit center.
Mm-hmm. And then that can be done.
You mean yes. Transit center or the Link station?
The Link station at the transit
the
center, not at the hospital, in downtown Bellevue at 110th and Northeast 6th.
The tunnel.
At the tunnel.
Meaning you go into the tunnel?
We would go into the tunnel.
Is the tunnel going to be built to accommodate that?
Link runs on the same gauge track as U.S. trains. It's the same track.
One more question. So if you electrified it, how much more would it be, since now you're a part of...
I don't know.
Estimate?
I don't know.
$1 million?
It's substantial. It's a substantial number more than running DMUs. So relative to when I think about Kirkland and stuff, if the when the tracks are rehabilitated, that alone will make the noise factor dramatically lower. And then you add in smaller, lighter vehicles. That's going to make it much quieter.
You've got an excursion line you're building through to Redmond.
Yes.
Can you not link up with Link there then if you've got a relationship with them? Why would you come to Kirkland?
Because I believe that a lot of people want to get to Seattle over 520.
So they can get off in Kirkland.
They could get off at the South Kirkland Park and ride. And again, this goes back to where I don't think that the 6,000 to 7,000 passenger number does not take into account any of the 520 changes. It takes into account none of the East Link. And East Link numbers, unfortunately, don't take into account any of this either. So, and the one thing that we know is that anytime you've got two major transit systems that cross each other, both systems benefit.
Mike?
My question was, have you decided how or thought about how this would fit in with the existing fare systems? Would it, would your service accept Orca, for example, or would it be separate?
Given Orca is just a smart card, and I was fortunate to have done some RFID and smart card work several years ago as it was just coming out. We can easily work with Sound Transit to make that a single pay system. I think that's what we need to focus on is the commuter themselves, and it took us a long time to get Orca done and working. I don't know that we necessarily will use their equipment. Rather expensive. We can solve the same problem, we think, with some different equipment.
Joel and then Tom.
With the kind of the logistics, the operations of what you're envisioning the Snohomish to South Kirkland line, what kind of frequencies would you be looking at and what kind of speeds or travel time? And then how does that compare to the assumptions in the Sound Transit PSRC studies that came up with that? That 6,000, 7,000 number
I think that
forecast for that.
I believe that there were 16 stations that Sound Transit had identified. We think that's too many for the line.
So, go ahead.
So we think that that's going to increase the travel speeds a bit. I think as it relates to Kirkland specifically, Totem Lake's a mess. I mean, it's something that we all would like to see developed better. The railroad tracks don't particularly help things out the way they, where they're situated and everything. I don't know if there's a great deal we can do about it or not, but at least we're willing to talk about what we can do there, whether it's, light synchronization or just what it is. But these DMUs, just think about two cars is it. So going through the average speeds are going to be slightly higher than what you saw in the PSRC report.
Which was?
I think the highest speeds in these areas, I don't know. And don't quote me on it, but I think you're talking about like maybe 35 miles an hour or something like that.
So how long would it take you to get, if somebody got on in Snohomish and wanted to get to the South Kirkland Park and Ride, how long do you think it would take?
Less than 25 minutes.
Okay, and then how often would you run the trains?
It's going to be really based on the demand that's out there. There's some very interesting curves, relative to when does the traffic start to really pick up, besides just looking out here at 4:05 in the morning, and then how late does it run. But there's a very busy window, if you will, between people wanting to get to work between 8 and 10, and then again in the late afternoon. So another problem you have is that not everybody just wants a train running in the morning and the afternoon, so maybe you would have to fill in and have an hourly train or something midday to go through. I don't know. This is something, again, we need to see what Sound Transit has in their RFP. We have no idea what that's going to exactly look like or require. I understand that it's their intention right now to have a transit easement on the entire corridor is what they're negotiating for.
I have three questions. One, I missed when you wanted to start your excursions from Snohomish to Redmond.
Contractually with the port, we're supposed to start in June.
In June of...
This June. But because there are some maintenance things, and we do not know the condition of the bridges we're likely to defer that until the inspections are completed and we understand what that looks like. So even we're likely to go back to them and have that at least delayed a bit so we figure out what that looks like. The other side is because of the changes in the FRA since September and the way that they process loans, like I said, the soonest we can get is this coming September would be the soonest we could be funded in its full, and what they do is they reimburse.
Okay, my other question is the excursion train from Redmond to Snohomish doesn't have nearly the number of pinch points and high traffic area crossings as from Woodinville to South or Turklin Park and Ride. And you were saying that you're running freight now from Woodinville to Snohomish.
Yes.
When is that happening? What time of day? All day?
No, there's not, that, there's not enough volume.
Exactly.
We're running it typically midday. It's a, we try to do it as a daylight hour operation. Nobody's out there at the crack of dawn. I think it would be interesting to note that we've already identified enough incremental business, new business, to double the freight traffic by the end of this year. So we could actually get this to a break-even proposition on freight alone with any luck by the end of the year. And then we've got another, we're dancing with an elephant right now as well. So that, who knows what that'll happen.
And that's where I'm trying to understand better, because I think you've got some learnings that you've already described in that quarter that you're already trying to run excursions mm-hmm. and freight on. And I think they would be informative to us about, you know, how do you get through downtown Woodinville? How do you get over the hill? How do you cross into Snohomish, across Highway 2? All of those are going to be important kinds of tests, not quite the volumes that you've got on 124th and 124th. But when
and 124th.
When you start doing 124th and 124th, it has repercussions on what are we doing with
right.
with surface traffic for automobiles at the same time. So mm-hmm. really that trying to think ahead of what would this mean. And then, of course, if we do want, and I think we do want, a trail there, how do we get people or bikes through that same intersection and the same speed? Just, it's mind-boggling to me. But, of course, you know all the answers.
No, I don't. I don't even have a clue when it comes to that intersection. Frankly, I know that we can do better on light timing, signal synchronization, and so forth. We don't have any intentions of running freight south of Woodinville, other than there are some lumber yards there just immediately south, what, about half a mile, whatever. You know, if they want our business, we probably would be open to that.
Okay, we're going to try and wrap this up. I have okay. one kind of fairly big question, and that is, you know, for the people we've heard about, I mean, your idea sounds appealing in the sense of, you know, using the ballast and being able to put it, at least the basics of a trail and so forth. It seems like what we've heard from folks that are real trail advocates are, you know, they want to be assured that there's going to be some trail there. And then there's, for me, it's the issue of cost. The PSRC study at like $1.3 billion. Mr. Jones has said, oh, we can do it for, you know, like $50. Sorry, Tom, it's sort of at that extreme. You're talking $100 million. In my mind, until someone really gets a handle on, you know, how much of a trail could you actually put down in a system like yours, and how much would it cost? You know, we're talking, you know, throwing around a few $100 million until we get our arms around that, I think it's going to be hard for anybody to make a decision on what can work here.
Well, I think you need to be working on, if I were in your shoes, what I would be working on is how rail and trail work together.
Okay.
Okay, it's not a question of what comes first, rail or trail. The rail is there. The with the ST2 money, there's $50 million out there to utilize that rail. So as it relates to how we deal with those pinch points, that's really the county's concern. We're just here to let you know that we are willing to be as cooperative as we can in reconciling those, and because we know that we can get that base trail down in the non-pinch point areas real cheap and real easy. It's not that big of an incremental cost. You're talking about, we figured from Woodinville North is something like $3 million of incremental cost to do that little bit. If you're out there doing, you know, it's about a little over $1 million a mile, $1.4 million a mile to rehabilitate track. So the difference between Sound Transit's numbers are not wrong. I don't think that numbers that Cascadia's looked at, I don't think that the budget that I've put together is wrong. I think what it is a question of how you want to approach the problem. If you and your wife decide that you want to go get a new car and you want to go get a new Honda, and one of you goes out and selects an Acura and the other one comes back with, you know, low budget Accord, they're going to have two totally different price tags. But they're going to solve the same problem, which is you wanted a four-door Honda of some sort. So what we want to do, our basic stations, our offer is going to look, it looks something like this. We will put a base station and platform, gravel parking, and probably paved walking areas. We'll put that in. If the community comes back and says, you know, we'd really like to have a fancier station, a nicer station, and we'd like to have paved parking, that's fine, but then we're going to look for some funding help to make that happen. So if we can make this pay for itself, it's going to be because we really watch how much money we spend on this and we put into it. We want to be as helpful as we can where we can, and we want to make sure that we're successful with freight and the excursion service. But to get passenger service to go, we collectively are going to have to work on this, and that $50 million from Sound Transit is the first step.
Okay, does anybody else have any other questions?
Got a ton of questions.
I'm sure we've generating. Yeah, I'm probably like to welcome you back sometime as things get
certainly
further along. And
I just live down there. I walk down here, so it's no big deal to come down.
I would say, and we do appreciate you coming here. Is I think what's in my mind, what's absolutely necessary is everybody needs to at least get their arms around what is the definition of what we're trying to achieve here. And you're right. If we're wanted Acura, we. This and so I think people have different visions of what this looks like, what we're trying to get a handle on.
I would caution the committee as well, or encourage the committee to work on the set of assumptions that you're starting from, along with those aspirations of where it is you want to go with it. I'm trying to be as open and honest with this as I can be. In what we see longer term, and we just want to make sure that we do this as cooperatively with the communities as we can. Thank you all very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
I was going to suggest if you're ready to. And the next part, maybe Marie Steak and Kari Page can come down.
Yeah, so now we're going to have spend about a half an hour, or how long it takes to talk about the next steps in terms of a public process and kind of a schedule for how we might go back to council and get a local process going to further address this topic. I'd like to introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Kari Page.
And I'm Kari Page.
Just kidding.
Welcome. I'm Marie Steak.
Yeah, please tell the truth.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I couldn't resist. So I'm not sure if you all know who I am. I'm the communications manager, and Kari's the neighborhood services coordinator part-time, the other time CIP outreach coordinator. We are both trained in public participation planning through the International Association of Public Participation. And from here on out, I'm going to call that IAP2 because it's a mouthful. And so we've kind of been knocking on Dave Godfrey's door to help you all with a public participation process centered around the East Side Rail Corridor. And the purpose of the staff memo was just to kind of lay out that planning process in as few words as possible, and to let you know that we've kind of initiated the process and share with you what we've learned so far. Does that sound okay? Mm-hmm. Much of the beginning phases of planning for public participation is talking to a lot of people and asking a lot of questions. And so Chair Samdahl and Vice Chair Bunch were nice enough to spend some time with me. And their perspectives and ideas and thoughts are in one of your attachments in the staff memo. And then the past week or so, Kari and I have been talking to some key stakeholders, elected and appointed officials, advocacy group leaders, kind of the obvious key stakeholders at this point. And we just wanted to share some of the nuggets that we've heard in the past week or so around this issue. And the questions that we've been asking are also contained as an attachment in your packet. We've kind of identified internal and external questions, and we've tweaked them, which has been nice. It's the nice thing about doing these initial interviews is we can kind of tweak the questions, but the feedback that we've got about the questions is they make sense and understandable and all that. So I'm going to talk of a little of the nuggets that I heard around issues that the key stakeholders that we spoke to kind of reflected back to us. And one of them is connectivity. A couple of people said that, and we asked them to kind of define what that meant. And I'm just going to say these briefly. Train from Redmond to Snohomish, high-capacity transit to our urban center at Totem Lake, north and south bike ped use in Kirkland on the corridor within our limits, and to get commuters to the East Link in Bellevue. Another issue that kind of surfaced was about the long-term use. Let's not think about what we want in 10 years, let's think about and plan for what we want in 50 years. And a couple of folks reflected back the impact of housing and land use along the corridor in the long term, a long way out. Safety was also an issue that kind of surfaced with several stakeholders that we spoke to. Whatever the uses are going to be sure to design and build them for safety, because there are a lot of schools along the corridor. Funding was also an issue that surfaced with several people. The ST2 RFP, and I can drop an acronym just as good as anyone, and I haven't read it, but is a couple of folks reflected back that that's the big next question to be answered here, and that we should explore other funding sources such as RIF, and thank you, Mr. Engel, for explaining that acronym. But that we don't plan, that we don't take so long that we miss out on funding as well. So the obvious last big issue is the use. What's it going to be? Trail only, rail only, both? And, you know, what kind of use that would be?
I'm fully awake now.
Okay. And some of the specific issues around the use were trailheads, crossings, stations, pinch point, which that was a new vocabulary word I learned today, and timing and the phasing of the uses and the combination of having them both. So really that's just an overview of about a dozen folks that Kari and I have talked to, and she's going to share with you what she heard about the expectation of our public process.
So first I heard people applaud the Transportation Commission and the City Council for reaching out to the community. Apparently some of the other municipalities have come out with statements for both the rail and trail and haven't done much of a public process yet, so they thought that was great that Kirkland was looking into this. Clearly, people said we need to get out ahead of rumors, of misinformation, of fears, and distrust. And we need to provide timely, unbiased, accurate information to our residents. And it's a very complex issue, so we need to do a good job of this because it's very difficult. As we start planning our public process, we need to know what and how Kirkland's input can effectively be used at the regional level. And we need to stay in step with the county's public process. And we need to communicate to our public how We are going to use their input. We heard that we should keep our process open, accessible, fair, and visible to all, that we should involve those who are too busy to be involved somehow. It shouldn't just be the advocacy groups. We got to figure out a way to get others involved because it's going to impact the whole community. Comments like don't let one or two groups hijack the process or the project, and keep an eye on what other municipalities are doing and if they're changing their minds or they're coming out with different statements. And then someone made an interesting comment to the Transportation Commission, and that is public opinion is one thing, but the Transportation Commission has an obligation to advise the City Council on what they believe is a scientifically sound decision for Kirkland and the region. And when we don't really ask people to jump to techniques in this initial phase of questioning, but someone did, and I thought this was an interesting idea. Bring together a working group to develop Kirkland's vision. It should represent all interests. It should be people who can work together. They should be open-minded, creative thinkers, and knowledgeable about technologies and finance. And they should be able to efficiently and effectively debate the issues, yet keeping Kirkland and the community's greater good in mind. And then the last comment, the obvious, maybe not so obvious, but we ought to involve the annexation area. So that's what we've heard so far. And I think what we plan on doing is come back in May 19th, with the conclusions of all the interviews that we've done and talk about some techniques that we might use and a timeline.
Right. Because part of the IAP, too, is, and the staff report kind of explains it, take in stakeholder opinion and perspectives and kind of reconcile those with the issues that are out there. And it helps you develop where you're going to land on the spectrum as far as how you're going to involve the public. And then you actually go to the toolkit, the manual, and for every spectrum level, there's tons of tools you can use. So our job is to kind of vet out what we feel will be the most meaningful and effective, and that's what we'll return to you in May with.
So I've got a process question and sort of a question related to the commission itself. So if you come back in May with a suggested process, we say, yeah, that looks good. Would the idea be then that we'd forward that on to the council as soon as practical? And
all right. Aren't you scheduled for a June something update to the
council? So that may also be a major topic at our workshop. And then the council, would they, I guess it depends what it is, but they either have to approve the process, I guess, to the extent if there's any funds involved, I guess that would be something, and then they would set the schedule and so forth. Is that how it goes?
Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable. We'd need to check in with council and get their buy-off. I think that's what we said we were going to do when we talked to them last about this, and that memo said we're going to go come up with some kind of public. Hey, do you want us to work on this and come up with a public process, and we'll be back? And they said, yeah, great, go work on it, come up with something, and come back.
Okay, then just one other quick question. Maybe you can't address
this. The only other thing I want to add to that the timing will be, certainly they'll have some input, but it's really up to you to know the time frame that we need to have decisions to them and things like that. So they'll be looking for some sort of timing. I think fall was, we had some, in the big picture, we had some time frames that we sort of laid out there already, so.
Right.
It's concurring
which,
with those.
Yeah, which are kind of moving around because of King County's regional project.
So my other kind of question is then, we're not quite sure exactly what our role is going to be in this. We'll be involved in some respect, but it could be more or less depending on the appropriate technique. Is that
right
there?
I mean, do you have thoughts about what you would, how you would like to be involved?
That's where I wanted to get some input from folks, Tom.
I'm just curious. So, there is only one process in the city. There's only going to be one process to deal with these issues. Because somehow I read this, it looked like the city council was doing something, and we were doing something. Mm-hmm. There's just one city process. Makes sense. You are designing that process. Okay.
With your help, yeah.
So you'd like input from us on mm-hmm. the documents you've provided here mm-hmm. as to what? Okay, good. I assumed that we were going to play a pretty key role in this process, more so than any other organization in the city, other than the staff, obviously. Is that true?
Yes, you're certainly a key stakeholder, and we have you all on our list to eventually interview at some point.
But that, from that, I perceive that I'm not a key driver of the process. I'm a participant. You're driving it. So you're interviewing a lot of people that I would like to hear from, and that's okay. I'm trying to understand how involved we will really be as a commission if we're going to take responsibility for the result. Are you going to do all the interviewing and tell us what you heard? And you're going to interview us and tell us what you heard from each of us? Mm-hmm. Or are we interviewing the public? And is the public going to come talk to us? Or is that something you haven't figured out yet?
Our role as public participation planners mm-hmm. is to do the stakeholder interviews. You all, the commission, are like our clients, Kari and I's clients. Mm-hmm. And we are facilitating some of the conversation. Depending on what techniques come up, we're trained to do the actual interactive technique, whatever might
be. Will you be building then the deliverable to the council as well?
No.
And we will be signing off on it? Or
but Marie, can I ask a question here, which I think might clarify? You're interviewing people right now, stakeholders,
right.
for the purpose of designing a process.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're not trying to figure out at all what the right answer is.
No.
You're just trying to figure out what the process is. And then the process will be the time when you all hear.
So there's a point where you're going to pass that over and help guide us through a process.
Right. Yes.
But we will be the ones
driving it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess if we go back to the flow chart that we presented to council, we kind of described a process where we went to council in last month and said, well, should we go take this on? They said yes. Mm-hmm. We said, okay, we'd come back and propose the council a process, which is this phase. They would say yes or no or something, and then the process would happen. And I think to answer Don's question, I think the key thing that we're doing at the end of all of this is crafting the position statement that goes back to council at the end. So I think the level of participation along the way is really about how do we get enough information to be able to craft that statement.
I think that's true, although depending on what happens, for example, let's say the process comes back is preferred to set up a 20-member committee, citizen committee, and go through a series and come up with a recommendation from their citizen committee. In a context like that, I'm not sure exactly what our role is other than maybe as a participant in there. The other way it could be, like, let's say it's a series of workshops, targeted workshops that we would host, in which case, you know, maybe we are the key player. So I'm not sure we know yet. We know we want to play an active role, but I think it's a little hard to say exactly where we fit in terms of the decision. Is that a fair statement at this point?
I want to add a little bit of clarification maybe of what Tom's bringing up here, too. I would take what Sandeep said. This group has talked about, yeah, I think we'll do this, and we drafted kind of a flow. And we had a kind of a black box around the public participation process, and it was left somewhat. And so when we went back to the council, that was presented, and they said, yeah, you pretty much have what we want. And the next thing is we'd like you to come back and tell us the process that you're going to do. So we hired a consultant, so to speak, to help us develop that. You, again, as Marie stated, you're the client. you will own this process. And I think they're just right now out trying to do some fact-finding, trying to help describe that. The council is looking to you, Transportation Commission, to be the owner of this, to be, you know, as if you have to host the meetings, the charrettes, the whatever, to come back to them and say, yeah, you are driving this. So we won't, as staff, kind of be taking this over. I think just this phase, we're sort of fleshing out what are some options available to you, the client.
Okay, so Carl.
We've got a lot of information here about public process, dealing with what to me is that very important technical and financial aspects to it. And we've not got any process that I've heard of so far to help us analyze the technical and financial aspects of whether, and the key question there in my mind at this point is it really feasible to do both modes in this corridor? And we've heard of several pinch points. Can we get both modes through those pinch points in a way that's technically and financially doable? That's something that, you know, maybe a consultant could help with, but I'm not sure a public process is the way to answer that question to me. I mean, this is not as complicated as rocket science, but still it's got some technical and financial aspects there. And I mentioned rocket science because you don't look at public opinion when you're planning a moonshot as to how you do the science of it.
Yeah.
Maybe you look at public opinion as to whether or not to spend the money for a moonshot.
Yeah, I think that's probably more the question. Mm-hmm. We're not being asked to come up with the technical solution here. Mm-hmm. The first step is, what does Kirkland want? You know, the technical analysis and things like that will come later. And so I think it's important to, there are a lot of positions in the community. The council's hearing a lot of different positions. They want to get some sort of a sense. One, we want to be able to represent Kirkland's position at this bigger community, you know, King County Sound Transit. But we have to be able to articulate that. We don't know what to articulate yet. The technical elements will come. That's not the role of this group right now.
But I can tell you right off, I would love to see both modes in this corridor. I just don't know if it's technically and financially feasible to do that.
Yeah.
So it's tough to actually say that it's a meaningful position to say we want both modes.
If I may, I would just jump in and say, and that in some ways shapes the public process. Do we go out and say, let's free associate, and wouldn't you like to have a red Ferrari that is the new $900,000 car? Well, yeah, I would. That'd be nice. I'd love to drive it. It'd be great fun. Mm-hmm. But as Carl says, we may still be in a Honda, and or, you know, now we're in a Cobalt. Mm-hmm. The key here is, I think, at least as I look at this process, some of that public comment has got to be options. You can do this, but this is what it's going to cost you. You can do this, and this is what's going to cost you. And that cost may not be all money. It may be convenience, it may be access, it may be influence on your backyard, but I love it because it's your backyard and not my backyard. We really have got to have some of that comparative piece, because that way then we really get to the what I think is the key question of not what do we want. I would agree with Carl. I want a trail and a rail, and I would like to have it in June. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What is realistic? What can we get? What is it that we're willing to pay for is a very different question than what do I want? And I think that does involve some of the technical, mm-hmm. not all of it, but it does involve those questions. And so, you know, we've got to have at least enough of a vision of those points depending upon which segment of our populace we're looking at that says, so how do we get people out of the South Kirkland Parkland ride if a train's rolling through there and you've got 18 buses who are lined up to shift you back to 520? And, oh, by the way, we're also going to be building two new buildings over the top of all that and whatever else. There must be 14 or 13 other things. So I'm going to posit that I love the way you're approaching this. I think it's a great idea to begin to say, what are the elements? Mm-hmm. I hear those words, and they actually are a little scary to me. Mm-hmm. I want it to be open. I want it to be accurate. I want it to be complete. I want it to be fair. I'm going to put on the table here. I work my chief residents every year, and I say, I'm going to remove a word from your vocabulary for this year. You may not use the word fair. Fair has value attached to it. Your values and my values may not be the same. I can talk about equitable. We can talk about equitable service. We can talk about other things. But I think we need to do some of that. You know, I'm hearing you. What are our goals? Where are we going? I'm hearing Tom. Where are we going? But we need to put together some parameters around what we're doing. Mm-hmm. But candidly, I think before we go out and say, well, let's have one of the, I've got to find the right acronym here, one of the mobile train thingies.
DMU.
Thank you. I'm good at acronyms too, but not that one. We want to pull a DMU down into Houghton, and we're going to invite everybody to come by and look at it. And gee, if we were to put in a train station right here, what's your reaction to it? I think that's very powerful. It's also very risky.
Okay, so Joel.
And so I think that, you know, everything you've said is right on, and I see this as, in the past, the Transportation Commission, maybe on less controversial issues, has put together like a position letter for council. And it's been kind of a lens through which Kirkland is viewing something so that then council can go off and talk about 520 and what do we think about tolling or something like that. And frankly, it may be a huge issue, but it's not one that people feel quite so strongly about or is such a stark difference. And frankly, that's what I see as the initial part of this process, is that we may get to the point where, you know, I would like to see something that would be statements about what we would like to see maybe even coming next. You know, is that 6 months from now we may not know the answer to all these questions. Well, we probably won't, because there's a lot of consultant work and a lot of, but some way that we can judge and a lens that we can evaluate this stuff through when staff is at a meeting on BNSF, or, you know, when Kirkland City Council is on a board that's evaluating this, that they know Kirkland's had a conversation about this, and the most important thing is that we have something, we're using the corridor quickly. Maybe it's less about what it is, but that we're getting some utility out of it. And those kinds of principles that then the cities kind of come to terms with, this idea of equitable. We need to know before Kirkland makes a definite position, we need to have the facts in front of us, and the facts include detailed analysis of ridership. We want to know, maybe it's, we want which one moves more people, you know, in a carbon neutral fashion. I mean, I don't know, but those are the kinds of things that, to me, at the end of this process, we need to, because then we can use those when we do get the facts to look at through and evaluate and figure out through this, you know, long-term process. In the past, we do that through a couple Transportation Commission meetings, and Dave would listen to all our rambling, and he'd kind of turn that into a letter and come back, and we'd edit a little bit, and we'd hand it off to council. But obviously that's not going to work in this instance.
Well, Dave's going to need at least 2 weeks to write the letter. Okay, Tom.
Yes. Thanks. I understand the role you're playing. Thank you.
Yeah. Sure.
It seems that in this instance it might be help define our beginning and how we're going to do this if we look at the end, meaning what is it we're going to deliver to the council. And if we've defined that, even in an outline form, and enough detail that we understand what it is we're trying to build, it may be easier for our help to define what process needs to happen to get us the right facts, whether they're financial facts or technical facts, from all those interest groups who have the facts. There's a lot of facts out there. We don't necessarily need to be the experts, but we need the right people in front of us to tell us. And that process can be then defined to ask those experts to come, and here are the questions that we would like you to address on visiting with us, so that we do understand how much it costs to lay a mile of rail, and how much, just so that it helps our thinking when we're building, if it is the final document, needs to have some measure of viability when we make suggestions about options, we'll have that information, at least enough to get the council, you know, in a position where they can do some serious discussing at the county level. Yeah. But anyway, it's more the point of if we can define what it is we're delivering, the rest may be easy, because then we know where we have to go to get information to fill that document up. So it's a deliverable. What are we giving the council?
Joel?
And along the lines of that fact piece, I think that, frankly, from my perspective, that if we're going to delve into that here, I think we need somebody who's working for the commission to do that. If that's a consultant that we hire, it's working for the commission and the city of Kirkland and the citizens of Kirkland. And I mean, I think it's great to hear from the interest groups, whether it's the Trail Advocates or GNP or Cascadia or Cascade Bike Club, but they all come at it from a perspective. And I think that if we're ever going to really delve into the facts, I don't know if it's staff or if it's somebody, if we need to, you know, add somebody, that's the only way I think we're going to be able to really have, you know, really delve into that, frankly.
Yeah, and it feeds into the whatever the county's process is going to be, because I certainly hope they're going to have some objective body providing them information. And I think it is a big difference for us if our end product, I really like that thought, is if it's really like a statement of principles or something, that's one thing. But if we're asked to weigh in, boy, you know, this idea works really well, but the only way it's going to work is if we grade separate 124th and 124th, because it's going to, you know, save X number of accidents. And so we're, you know, if we're going to be asked, I think, as you said, Kari, to provide scientifically sound decisions, that's a whole nother level of input that we need. And that, frankly, is quite a departure from, you know, what we've been asked to do in the past. And, you know, we've got a multitude of different backgrounds and perspectives, and I'm sure, you know, we need more information to be able to give a decision like that or recommendation. Are there other thoughts, or do you have questions for us?
I just wanted to ask if there, if you took a look at the stakeholder questions, are there any ones that you don't like or want us to change? Or,
and remember that we'll be asking you each one of these, too. And that's why it's a little risky to give you the nuggets that we got already just in the last couple of days and the people that we talked to, because we have a whole lot of work ahead of us just to scope this out, as you can tell from your discussion tonight.
You helped me with the stakeholder series. You ask, I don't know that you asked these in this sequence. Do you?
I'm looking at the external or internal?
I'm looking at internal stakeholders.
Okay.
I like starting with what do you think are the key issues. I like what would be the outcome. I mean, if I would reorder this, were it being me that was doing the query. But I think part of what I would like out of this is identifying a bigger pool of stakeholders than the ones that are in that list at, and the bulleted at the top, because I'm not sure that they're all players yet. They're the ones we can get to quickly. I agree with you. And I would also posit to you some of what Tom is saying. And what do you think this ought to be looking like? I'm not sure I can do 50. 25 years from now, 20 years from now. What would you see this activity, this corridor being used for? And that really then gets us, I think, further to that long-term deliverable that we can begin to work backward from. But that's the only concern, it seems to me, you're asking lots of decision-maker questions.
Because remember that this is just scoping out the process that we're going to use. It's not asking about how to solve the problem. Once we ask these questions, we'll be able to figure out what kind of involvement we want on the part of the public and on what issues.
For example,
are we, you know, the big question to me is, are we going to be asking the community if they want rail and trail or just trail? Is that a done deal? Is it not a done deal? Some of those things we have to tick off first before we delve into what the public really has an input in. We have to kind of get down into those topics.
Sure.
And then we design our public outreach process.
One of the fundamental assumptions today was we own the right-of-way. We are going to operate a railroad.
Do we operate?
That's a given.
Yeah.
Or is it?
And really the purpose of the... these stakeholder questions are to glean the perspectives and the issues and begin to kind of match them up. What's high, what's medium, what's low concern, you know, for whatever the particular issue is. And when you get into the actual techniques or the activities, when you bring people into the room, that's your opportunity to explore more and get more and ask more.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is just for planning purposes, the questions. And if you look at the external questions, there is the last one, without knowing our stakeholders list, is there anyone else you feel we should interview? So we're going to get lots of names, I'm sure.
I'm just looking at the external as much more high level, mm-hmm. much broader. The internal is much more, it feels to me like it's somehow the lens is much more focused. And that may be just my naivete about this process.
I appreciate your perspective.
Is that fair, though? Do you think you would ask different people different levels of questions? Is that through the process? Could it be that way also?
Well, it was funny. After the first couple of interviews, I kind of thought, boy, am I asking the wrong questions for this person? Is he really an internal stakeholder or an external stakeholder?
We're still kind of sorting.
Right, and that's just the joy of doing these initial interviews is mm-hmm. you get better at it and you get more refined at it. But Kari and I just talked that we felt that the parties to the MOU agreement were internal stakeholders and that the elected and appointed boards, so the council and the commissions and all that, are also internal, because most of these people already have extensive, comprehensive knowledge about this issue. And the external are kind of the people that you wouldn't normally, that probably wouldn't normally tap into this. That's our job to go out and find them.
I guess I took a slightly different assumption about how you split internal versus external, which is why the questions didn't bother me so much, but maybe my assumption is different. I made the assumption that the way you'd craft internal stakeholders is these are people who shouldn't necessarily have a preformed opinion about what the answer is.
I'm sorry, did you say that for internal or
internal? Sorry, internal. Okay. The internal, that in theory, the internal stakeholders are relatively unbiased, and the external stakeholders are more likely to actually have an opinion or a well-formed position. And if that is true, then the questions actually align very, very well. it's not clear to me that, that if I look at the list of internal stakeholders, that assumption is actually true. And so it may be an interesting test to actually validate the assumption and see, you know, hey, do you have a position on what you think the correct answer actually is when asking the stakeholders? You know, who do you think, what do you think your position would be, and who do you think would agree with it, and who do you think would not agree with it?
Mm. Okay.
I imagine in the defining of this IAP 2, there's kind of a description of what is an internal customer or stakeholder. What is an external, and how, I mean, those are generally in this science that you guys went through,
right?
Which is, it's a pretty universal process,
right? And typically internal stakeholders are those associated with the client, the organization that's in the sponsoring the process.
Mm-hmm. And again, their effort is all toward designing the process, right, not conducting it.
Exactly.
So we may have our own list of questions that may look like this as people participate in that process. Maybe different, stakeholders. Maybe we may be inviting similar people to come talk, but this is to get the process to find.
Yeah. Exactly.
The only thing, you've got an opportunity statement on here, which I thought was a good thing, but it seemed like that was an opportunity to elaborate a bit, to maybe ask some of the stakeholders what they'd want us, what would be an ideal thing for us to show them when we're all done. It would make them very happy that the city has done its job. That's that deliverable thing.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, you gave me a book that had this in it, and boy, I think this commission did a fantastic job in fielding issues from the community and coming up with recommendations or whatever it is, or options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
mission statement almost, or here's this thing that would describe how I'd want this commission or what I'd want this commission to focus on when they're
working. Okay. Thank you.
Does that come out in like one of the tools you would use? I mean, depending on the tool you land on, you would have an outcome different, or is
well,
that
it's
why
certainly
it's maybe
a fair
not
question
asked now?
You can ask now,
yeah.
And ask again later.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about getting from the public, what Sam, was it Sandeep, somebody mm-hmm. said, looking at the end backwards, what does the product right. want out of this process?
Yeah.
Yeah, we asked that of the internal, but I don't know that.
We do ask, what outcomes do you want, or do you seek?
Yeah.
From the internal.
So,
would a way of phrasing that say, how would you define a successful outcome of this process? I mean,
right.
what is successful to you as a, you know, again, it's back to that whole thing of being open and everything. Somehow you are asking that.
We asked what would give it credibility,
okay.
a process credibility.
Okay.
Well, I'm fascinated with the statement you made, Marie, that in asking the question so far, you're beginning to identify, are they really in the fish or the fowl group? Because, in fact, there is some crossover there.
Mm-hmm.
So I also want to capture that information and look at this as almost a focus group to say, okay, what do we see from the folks who should be more knowledgeable, and how is that going to shape the kinds of questions? But I really like the idea of not only what do we want out of the corridor, but what do they want, what do we want, mm-hmm. they and we want out of the process.
Okay.
So I'm just
comment,
Business Roundtable, have you talked to them, or are they one of your stakeholders? They reacted pretty aggressively.
Yeah,
the opportunity to talk about this.
Yeah. Okay.
Great, thank you.
So this will be an interesting feedback at the next meeting. I guess I'd like to ask each of us here to kind of give some thought to what Tom had brought up about this end product idea in your own mind. You know, if we could try to, at the next meeting, try to articulate some thoughts around that, I think that would be useful to feed into the council as well, to get a sense for how far they really want us to take this down the track or down the road. And because that could well inform the process for sure. And the other thing we all need to keep in mind is, you know, we're one fish in the pond here. You know, we're not going to have a total say on what happens here, so we need to keep in mind, you know, trying to figure out what our neighbors are doing, and there's all the different interest groups outside of Kirkland itself. So I'm glad you're also including a lot of the other jurisdictions.
So that's a great idea at your next meeting, and we were going to interview each of you, and that question is on this list, so maybe what we could do is have the results of that back to you so that you can look at it.
Joel and I can feed you some thoughts in separately since you already talked to us.
Yeah, you were actually our guinea pigs, weren't you?
Right, right. Okay.
So to speak.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, gentlemen.
They were the prize race horses.
Pardon?
They were the prize race horses. They weren't.
They weren't guinea pigs.
Prize race horses.
My money's all wrong.